we cannot have a thriving economy if we don't have a rock solid legal system and just rule of law in general, in which everyone is equal under that system of laws.
Hi, I'm Jim Doyle, President of Business Forward, and you're listening to the Business Forward podcast. Business Forward helps local business leaders fix Washington by bringing Washington to them. Subscribe to our podcast to hear conversations with policy experts, elected officials, and business leaders about important issues like climate action and affordable healthcare.
In this episode, Business Forward hosted a briefing with former CIA officer and national security advisor Evan McMullen for a discussion on climate action and severe weather in Utah. In his conversation with Business Forward Executive Director Liz Fairchild, McMullen answered tough questions on topics ranging from inflation to rule of law to how severe weather affects small businesses all over the country. We hope you enjoy the conversation.
Hello, everyone. I'm Liz Fairchild, Executive Director of Business Forward. Today, we are pleased to host Evan McMullen. Evan is a national security expert, a former undercover CIA officer, and a chief policy director in Congress. Evan, we'll start with your remarks. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you very much, Liz. It's a pleasure to be with all of you, and I appreciate your interest and involvement in this civic process, certainly our elections, but I know for business leaders, it's much more than that. You're critical parts of our community and providing jobs, providing growth, providing opportunity to improve our way of life, our standard of living. And you have important voices here in Utah and around the country. So I'm pleased to be with you and count Utah's business leaders among certainly my allies in general, but certainly in this race. About a year ago, I entered the U.S. Senate race in Utah as an independent. Many of you may know that I've run previously for office as an independent. I ran a brief presidential campaign in 2016. Wanting to represent especially principled Republicans who I didn't feel were properly represented in that election. And since then, I've been working to build cross-partisan coalitions across the country to stand up to the rise of extremism on, frankly, the ends of the spectrum on both sides. And that has been my work. Here in Utah, I'm running to replace far-right Senator Mike Lee, who has come to embrace the extremes and really been a poster child for the politics of division in Washington. None of that serves Utah's best interests. And because of that, I believe we need to make a change. Now, interestingly, here in Utah, a majority of Utahns want to replace Senator Lee. The challenge is that this coalition, this majority, is divided between historic rival factions, Republicans, Democrats, and independents, and third parties like the United Utah Party. And so our big challenge here in this race is to bring people together, find common ground in order to do that, and mobilize a cross-partisan coalition to make a change, yes, replace Senator Lee, but also in general to stand up to the broken politics of Washington and help our country just overcome the major challenges that it faces. We face many challenges here in Utah that reflect those that we see nationally, but in many cases, they're more acute here. I've made a set of priorities. I call them priorities for renewal. The policy focus of my campaign, and they would be the focus of my time in the Senate. The first is defending our system of self-government, our democratic republic, which I think most of us understand is at risk now, certainly after January 6th. And there are other examples of that challenge continuing. But really, our system of self-government is fundamentally threatened these days, I believe, by a movement of Americans who believe that democracy in America has failed, and therefore we need a strong man to lead us. And that's something that we hear more explicitly now by the extremes. And I think it's important that we stand up to it. So that's the first priority. And these are not necessarily in a prioritized order. They're all priorities. The second is to lower healthcare costs. I believe we can make reforms within our current system that will address the underlying high costs of healthcare and allow us to expand access to people and also take budgetary pressure off of families and the federal budget. What am I talking about? I'm talking about allowing the government to fully negotiate on prescription drugs, I'm talking about expanding our use of telemedicine. I'm talking about ensuring we have fair competition in the provider space so that we don't have 600 to 700% margins on basic services, profit margins that many people, most people just can't afford. Another one is lowering inflation and getting our fiscal house in order. The national debt is over $31 trillion now. I think both parties have been guilty of overspending in different ways. There are things we can do to get that under control, avoiding unnecessary wars. Again, allowing the federal government to fully negotiate on prescription drugs. There are a range of things we can do to avoid austerity at this point, but still get our fiscal house in order. I think that that has to be a priority. On inflation, I think we need to be more energy independent. We need to help incentivize the return of critical manufacturing to America. That's as much an economic as it is a national security issue. So that's a priority. Another one is protecting our air and water. I believe that we have a deep responsibility of stewardship to protect the environment. And here in Utah, I think many of the people joining us today live here. Perhaps there are others who live around the country. But you know, we live in one of the most beautiful places on earth. As a CIA officer undercover, I traveled around the globe, and I can say authoritatively that Utah is one of the most beautiful places on earth. But we have a broader responsibility, not just here in Utah, but around the country and of course, globally to protect the environment. And here in Utah, it's as much an economic issue as it is an environmental issue, as it is a health issue. We have a disappearing Great Salt Lake that if we allow that to continue to happen, our air will be poisoned. We have a severe drought more generally, which is forcing municipalities at times to truck in water. So we've got to invest more in our water infrastructure as well as in our conservation practices. We have to improve them. More broadly, we need to invest more in clean technologies. We need to incentivize, you know, reductions in harmful emissions produced by the private sector, frankly. And I also think we need to help our rural communities diversify their economies. You know, many of our rural communities are holding on to old coal jobs that are disappearing, whether anyone likes it or not. And I think it's imperative that we ensure that our rural communities have high quality broadband and that we're investing in schools and healthcare in those places so that more and more people can choose to live there and work from there and work for a company anywhere in Utah or anywhere in the country or the world. And I think the pandemic taught many of us that we can be just as productive, if not more productive, working remotely. I know it's not true for every industry and every job, but I think there's a great opportunity for our rural communities to diversify their economies, but we have to invest in infrastructure for that to happen. So that's another priority. And then lastly, because I come from a national security background, I think it's important that we ensure that we're investing in advanced technologies. We have a habit of spending a lot on dated weapon systems that I don't think will keep us safe into the future. While our adversaries are investing in those advanced technologies, we lose most of the war games now with China that we do. I hope we never are in a conflict with China. But one way to prevent that is to ensure that our national defense remains strong. And we can do that by investing in advanced technologies. So more broadly, then I'll just close up by maybe giving a slight update. When I began this campaign and I said, I'm going to ask Democrats not to nominate a candidate and Republicans, principled Republicans will join me as well. And independents, sort of moderate independents and others from the independent lane will join us. And I'll ask the third party, the United Utah Party, not to run a candidate. And we'll all come together in a coalition to replace Mike Lee. I know that for many, I sounded absolutely crazy, and I understand that, but we're way down the road now. We've built this coalition. That's why we're in such a tight race with Senator Lee. We believe we're pulling ahead of him, and there's still lots of undecideds who are looking for an alternative to him, an alternative to the politics of division and extremism. So we have a real opportunity to win this. We have been raising, you know, more money than Senator Lee, frankly, and we have a tremendous opportunity to prevail here. You know, as business leaders, just in closing, I'll say that, you know, I have so much admiration for you because, you know, you have to make practical decisions in order to get real results. And in politics, we often see with the extremes, especially, that the rote ideological orthodoxy prevents them from doing things that just make sense, from following facts and reason in order to obtain the best outcomes possible. But that kind of politics is breaking our country. We're failing to overcome those major challenges I mentioned, you know, especially the two big challenges that I am most focused on, which are preserving our system of self-government and protecting our environment, in addition to all the other issues I mentioned that are also critical in the immediate term. Those big sort of existential issues, I think, require us to be driven by reason and by facts and by truth, I'll say. And so I think business leaders have just a tremendous opportunity to add so much to our civic discourse at this time in our nation's history, bringing a more practical, unifying approach to getting things done and solving problems. And that's why I'm so excited to speak with all of you today, and so excited to hopefully have as many of you who would like to be involved in the effort. And the way to do that, by the way, to get involved and to learn more about the effort is to go to evanmcmullen.com. And I certainly hope that we have ample opportunity to engage here and outside of this call.
Thank you so much. That was really helpful context. And I'm excited to be able to unpack some of those common themes that we've also been hearing from a small business leader network. So you have mentioned the coalition that you're working on and also some of the policy solutions you're thinking about for some of those themes. I heard rule of law, inflation, climate action, rural opportunity. So I think we should get right into it if you don't mind. Let's talk about Utah small business ecosystem. I think even if people on the call aren't from Utah, they can see some parallels in their own home states. So what are business leaders and entrepreneurs in Utah doing right now to build successful, sustainable recovery strategies as our national economy is kind of moving on from this pandemic-induced recession? What are you noticing?
Well, what I'm most excited about is, you know, over the last several years, especially, our entrepreneurs here have had tremendous successes, and they built companies that have been acquired by other companies or gone public. And what I'm seeing now is that these founders, having built and exited, are now eager to reinvest in Utah. And not only reinvest their capital, but reinvest their knowledge. You know, they're sharing their playbooks with other entrepreneurs about how to found and build and grow a business and ultimately, you know, exit if that's the goal. And I think that's just so encouraging. And so we have more talent moving to Utah. And of course, we've got great schools here who, you know, are developing the next generation of professionals and business leaders that also contribute to this growing opportunity. But I think we have an environment here in Utah where, you know, the regulatory conditions and the tax conditions are such that many people want to start businesses here, and they can grow their businesses here. And I hear from investors, even as a part of the campaign, frankly, I'll say that, you know, when I talk to major investors in Chicago and New York and San Francisco and elsewhere, Austin, Texas, Dallas, about this race and about Utah, I often hear interest in investing in Utah. In fact, some specifically ask me to give them recommendations for businesses that they should invest in here in Utah, because I think they see that we have such a healthy business environment here, especially for, you know, early and growing stage companies, and they want to be a part of it. So I just think it's important that, you know, a lot of the conditions are right for continued economic growth in Utah. How do we take it to the next level? Again, I think about getting more people involved. You know, there's a lot of success on the Wasatch Front in Salt Lake City and down to Lehigh and Provo, but I want to see that expanded to the rest of the state. And it'll look differently in different communities. They have different desires for what they want to see in their communities. But I, you know, my goal is to expand that opportunity beyond the Wasatch Front. And I think that's, you know, that's a good thing for the entire state. But the other thing I would say is that what I also hear from business leaders is that they want to make sure that our political leaders are committed to an inclusive state in which, you know, people of different backgrounds can come here and be part of our communities. And I think that's important. And that's a part of our history as a state. My ancestors first came to Utah in the mid-1800s. And at that time, of course, indigenous communities had already been here for a long time, but you had Americans and Europeans coming from different places within those areas, all to this place that we now call Utah. And they had many differences, but they found common ground to work together to solve problems. And in this beautiful but still very harsh environment, it was necessary that they worked together to solve problems. And we still have that as part of our DNA here in Utah. It's what I think makes us different from a lot of other places in the country. This, by the way, is something that I think Utah can offer to the rest of the country, is this approach of sticking to principle, but still finding common ground to solve problems. Again, I think the way of the successful business leader, certainly as well. But I am committed to that kind of leadership as well. And I know that I have many business leaders with me in wanting to ensure that Utah is an inclusive state where businesses can attract, you know, necessary talent to themselves and to different positions they have in order to continue to help drive this growth.
So let me piggyback off of that then. That is like a natural segue into my next question, which is about kind of rule of law and what you've been talking about when you talk about what democracy means for the business community. So can you expand on how the lack of transparency or the need for accountability in government can affect a community's business environment? What are you thinking around this topic?
Yeah, well, the rule of law is just so essential to a healthy business environment and to a healthy economy in general. I mean, during my CIA service, I lived in many countries where the rule of law is just not existent. And because of that, it's very difficult to attract investment either internally or externally, very difficult to build and grow assets in an environment where there is no rule of law. And so, you know, obviously we are nowhere close to the extremes that I lived in as a young CIA officer here in America. Thankfully, we generally have, you know, the rule of law. But I will say that it's threatened right now. And, you know, I think that there is a movement in this country that, as I mentioned, wants to dismantle American democracy. And part of that is holding themselves and their leaders, their figures above the law. And I think that's very dangerous. We cannot have a thriving economy if we don't have a rock solid legal system and just rule of law in general, in which everyone is equal under that system of laws. And, you know, I also worry about the Supreme Court. I think that we've seen the politicization of the court over the last several years in a way that has delegitimized the Supreme Court in particular in the eyes of Americans. I think the legitimacy of the Supreme Court among Americans is at its lowest place in recorded history. I think according to, I forget if it was Gallup or Pew who did that, but it's easily findable. But that's a big problem for us. You know, we need our nation's highest court to retain legitimacy in the minds of Americans across the country. And if it fails to do that in perception or even worse in substance, then we really will have a crisis when it comes to the rule of law. And our system of self-government, our democratic republic, you know, cannot exist without the rule of law. And so that's why it's so important, again, that, and I think most Americans, certainly most Utahns, are committed to that and committed to defending the rule of law. And that's certainly a part of our effort as we build this cross-partisan coalition.
Thanks so much. I want to make sure we touch on two other different types of threats to small businesses. The first is climate, which you mentioned at the top. We have seen how rapidly changing climate means that severe weather events are becoming stronger and weather patterns are increasingly unpredictable. So how are those patterns affecting small businesses in Utah?
Well, I think it's, you know, on the strictly environmental side, you know, we depend on millions of people here in Utah coming to visit our beautiful mountains and canyons, and a lot of them come to ski. And, you know, we're big skiers in my family. It's something we enjoy doing together. But I think the industry is threatened by, obviously, a lack of snowfall. And our snowfall and the resulting snowpack is our primary source of water in Utah. We're the second driest state in the union. And it's a big problem really for the entire economy, for small businesses, for larger businesses, if we don't continue to draw this steady flow and healthy flow of visitors, especially during the winter ski season. And so I think, you know, that's a part of it. Certainly, I think that the lack of water is a serious problem, and future potential threat to water access is a threat to other businesses that depend on water. Certainly agricultural businesses do that. but not just them. Certain technology companies also depend on water. And so we're going to have to, as I said earlier, improve our conservation practices. I do think we're going to have to make heavy investments in water infrastructure, but these things are important. Also, on the air quality side, again, that can negatively impact whether people want to visit Utah. You know, our kids at times now have their soccer games canceled because of air quality. And I hate to say that, because it's something that I never, ever thought I would see here in Utah. But literally, especially during the summer, you know, fire season, our air quality can get so bad that that we have to cancel outdoor activities or leagues, not we as parents, but leagues cancel them. That also, I think, deters people from, or can deter people from visiting when they otherwise might do so. And I also think it's a deterrent for those who may want to relocate to Utah to work at a great new company, growing company, or an established company. If they think they're not going to be able to enjoy the outdoors the way they might have in the past, then that can persuade them not to accept the job that they may otherwise accept. So again, you know, protecting our environment is an economic issue just as much as it is an environmental issue and a health issue.
Let's touch then on something you mentioned at the top, which was inflation. So we've seen in the news, you know, rising interest rates, and small business owners around the country can struggle with inflationary pressure. So what strategies are you thinking about? Are the businesses in your community thinking about so they can run an effective business model that can withstand things like rising prices?
Yeah, well, I just think it's so important that we bring more of our national supply chain back to the United States or to more stable places. And, you know, I'm someone who believes, let me make very clear, I believe in trade. I support free trade with an eye towards, you know, helping our communities adapt when there are major transitions from one way of doing business in an industry to another, or collapses of industries following technological advancements, et cetera. But we live in a world that is increasingly less stable. You know, certainly Russia, of course, has invaded Ukraine. China is threatening to do the same in Taiwan. The world is a less stable place. And my prediction is that over the next 10 years, it will continue to be that, if not worse. And so though I am a supporter of trade, of responsible free trade, I also note that if countries are just simply unavailable or unable to trade, then that's not a possibility. And that I think is more likely the world's future going forward. And so again, with regard to our supply chains, I think we need to do what we can to incentivize the return of more of our critical manufacturing. And that helps our small businesses that struggle to get, you know, new. I mean, I was visiting a candy company here in Utah a couple of months ago, and you know, they have really struggled to get supplies and the machinery they needed in order to keep up with demand. And that's a problem. And I also think on the labor side, you know, we're struggling to meet demand with supply because our labor force isn't as strong as it can be. I think we need to expand it. We need to help people get back to work safely. Hopefully we're, you know, emerging from the pandemic, but we're facing another season, according to the experts, of a rise in infections. And I also think we need to help people retrain so that we can better match job needs and labor needs with our labor force. And I don't think we do a good job with that. So that's another thing that I think we can do to help small businesses.
I was just in Utah, actually, with our initiative called the Small Business Digital Alliance, which touches on how businesses can go digital, like entering the digital economy, which was going to be my last question for you. So what do you think are the most important priorities for small business owners who are trying to tackle some of those challenges you just outlined? Finding talent, entering new markets, being flexible in a digital economy, how can they engage effectively?
Well, I would look to them to tell me what they need to do and what I can do to help. I think that, you know, that's my goal. My goal is to be an ally to especially the small business community to help them grow and help them create new jobs. And, you know, I think one issue is ensuring that key laws that govern the way certainly e-commerce is done throughout the country, you know, are such that business, small businesses aren't having to navigate a patchwork of laws as they sell product and services around the country. And I think that's increasingly a challenge as more businesses operate remotely and online. And of course, government always is sort of lagging in responding to changes, but that's something that we need to ensure that especially small businesses that don't have the resources to easily navigate different regulatory environments on some critical issue in every single state, let alone any country they may sell into. You know, we need to make that as easy as possible for our small business leaders in America, at least domestically. So I'm committed to that. But certainly, you know, I'm an ally. I have many friends who are successful entrepreneurs, and you know, they've been unsuccessful at times and successful at other times. Some of them very, very, very successful. You know, my mother was an entrepreneur, ran a small business out of our garage when I was growing up. We struggled financially as a family. But, you know, my mother ran a business where she would order basic food items in bulk and then sell them in also bulk quantities to people in the neighborhood. So she was Costco before Costco. And I bet she wishes she had kept going with that. But my wife is an entrepreneur, started and sold a web development company. And so I've just got a great deal of respect for those who have the courage and tenacity to start and build companies in Utah and across the country. So I want to be an ally and an active friend in making their jobs as easy as possible because it benefits us all.
Well, speaking of tenacious Utah business leaders, we have two that can ask live questions today, which we're thrilled to be able to do. So I'd like to introduce our first question asker, Jake Bracken. He's the CEO of HD Management, Sand Hollow Resort, and Gallup Land Partners. And I'd like to invite Jake to come off mute and ask your question directly to Evan.
Okay, thank you. Maybe my question is mostly related to the time of year right now, but you've talked a little bit about healthcare, and I'm going through the process myself and watching the healthcare costs rise, especially as managing a number of businesses across various industries. My question to you would be, how can we, you know, as we manage those healthcare costs, in particular here in Utah, how do we stay competitive with those rising costs?
Yeah, I just think that we've got to be willing to put people first in our country when it comes to healthcare. I'm someone who believes that we have a moral obligation to ensure that everyone has access to quality, affordable care. You know, we have a $31 trillion debt, and that's something that we need to address. And, you know, it's a serious problem. I still believe that we have the ability as a country to ensure that everyone has access to quality, affordable care if we're willing to stand up to major special interests that challenge that. And I'm talking about, you know, large pharmaceutical companies. I mean, look, I want them to succeed. I want them to have the resources that they need to reinvest and develop new drugs and therapies. You know, that's important for America. I want that to continue. I want the incentive to continue to be there. But there are some corruptions in that market that lead Americans and our government through Medicare and Medicaid to pay more, far more for prescription drugs than we need to. So I believe we need to allow Medicare and Medicaid to fully negotiate on prescription drugs. I think it's important that we ensure that generics can produce off-patent drugs and that major pharma companies can't pay generics not to produce their off-patent drugs so that they can continue to overcharge. I think it's important that we limit the extent to which a drug manufacturer can make a slight update to a formula and gain a whole new patent that will extend the term under which they're able to continue to keep prices very high. Another one is on the provider side. I mean, we have some very good providers here in Utah. Generally in the country, we have a problem though with monopolistic providers who at times charge 600 to 700% profit margins for basic services. And you know, this is an audience of business leaders. And I say to you, you know, show me an industry where someone is charging 600 to 700% profit margins, and I'll either show you a brand new industry that's going to have a lot of new entrants in competition, or I'll show you an industry that a market, in fact, that has been corrupted for some reason. And so that's something we have to address. Then there are other things we can do, like ensuring that we have, that we strengthen telemedicine for our rural communities, but also for people who suffer from mobility challenges. But also, I think the rest of us is just far more efficient for a lot of needs, healthcare needs we have, to receive help remotely. And that's not, it won't solve everything. We still need to be able to go in and see a doctor and get tested and all of that. But those are ways that we can lower healthcare costs materially for Utahns and for all Americans. But this is the thing, we have to be willing to put people first and stand up to major, major special interests. And I'm willing to do that. And that's the commitment I've made in this campaign.
Thank you so much, Jake, for your question. Next, we're going to go to Edward Roche. He's the co-founder of Eastern Utah Farms and Res Mesa Science and Refining. Edward, if you come off mute, I'd love for you to ask your question.
Thank you very much. And I also want to add that I'm a recent transit to Utah. So I'm a Utah resident now for the past 2 years, and also I'm Asian American. So what you said really put a lot of faith in me and the state of Utah going forward. But my question is very specific on water rights. And basically with all, there's all the talk about record drought and over allocation of water rights. How does Utah protect its water rights and assure availability for its people?
Yeah, well, thank you, Edward. I do believe that we're going to have to renegotiate our water rights in the West based on population growth. I mean, those agreements are dated, and we're going to have to renegotiate them. And I'm committed to doing that and representing Utah and as effectively as I possibly can. At the same time, I do think we're going to need to invest in infrastructure. There's just no way about it. There's no other way. And it's going to be very costly. And the federal government, I think, has a role in that. And whether the Salt Lake survives, for example, is not just an issue for Utah, and it's an issue for the entire West, and I would say for the entire country, therefore. So I think the federal government is going to have to play a major role in saving the Great Salt Lake. We're going to have to do our part too as Utahns and have tough conversations about how we use the water that we do have. And we live in the second driest state, and that's something that I think we don't always acknowledge as we make decisions about how we use water in our personal lives and in other settings. And I think we're going to have discussions about that. But it's a combination of those three things: renegotiating Western water rights, investing in water infrastructure, and improving our conservation practices. If we do those things, we can weather this drought and still maintain our way of life and our standard of living here in Utah.
Thank you so much, Edward. We appreciate being able to do live questions with both Jake and Edward. Thanks for getting to those, Evan. I have one last question for you before we go. How can business leaders get involved in the issues we discussed today?
Well, again, I just think business leaders have such a valuable perspective to add to the country in this time of such great division and extremism. I mean, business leaders can't afford to be divisive or extreme. They have to make decisions based on fact and data and reason, and there's just no other way for businesses to succeed. And I think we need more people, business leaders and otherwise, calling for a similar approach to self-governance. The extremes rule the roost now. And as a result of that, we don't see our leaders working very frequently to overcome all of these challenges that we've been discussing. And it's because the rote ideological orthodoxy really prevents people from just looking at facts and evidence and data and making rational decisions. But business leaders have to do that. Like no one else. Maybe medical professionals do that as well. But that is the main thing that I think business leaders can bring to the table, is just getting involved in the civic discourse from that perspective, writing op-eds from that perspective, letters to the editor, posting on social media, running for office themselves, engaging with elected leaders and with candidates, much like you are now. Getting involved in campaigns in ways large and small. There are so many ways. I mean, if people are interested in getting involved in this campaign in the final weeks when it really matters, I mean, we have a real race on our hands and the momentum is on our side. We're rising quickly. We need to finish strong, and people can join us at evanmcmullen.com and figure out how to get involved. But there are so many ways. I mean, there are business leaders who are involved in helping us make, you know, ads for the campaign and helping us reach new voters who we know are looking for an alternative to Lee. I mean, there are just so many ways for people who know how to build and organize and make rational decisions. There's so many ways for you to get involved. And again, you can go to evanmcmullen.com and do that. And I certainly welcome you to this broader team.
Thank you so much, Evan. It was great to hear a roundup too of all the ways in which business gets smart on the issues and advocate for solutions that work for them at the local level. So we really appreciate your time today and your perspective coming from Utah. So again, thank you so much to Evan and his team, our two live question askers, Jake and Edward, and everyone who joined today's briefing. And we hope you can join us at our next one. Have a great day.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. For more information on Business Forward programming, visit businessfwd.org. The Business Forward podcast is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Jim Doyle, produced and engineered by Alexi Lippman and Alex Pastanen. Thanks for listening. See you next time.